Can you say the letter C?
Files. Ladies and gentlemen, I mean, it's not very often that Clint Casper's nervous, but he is nervous today with a special guest that's on. We're going to get right to that in a second. Man, this is a big deal for me. You know, like, it's like you see Michael Jordan on the street and you're like, oh my God, that's him. This is kind of where I'm at right now. Like, I've got this podcast and I'm not going to say who it is yet, but I've got this, you know, I've got the fucking man on the other line. But anyway, we got to run down through who makes this podcast go. So, Dead of Summer, Grizzly Coolers, between farming, partying, we was at the shoot last weekend, ton of farming. Man, I mean, whether it's the Grip Cup, whether it's the 20, whether it's the Drifter 20, I've been using that 15 hard. I got that big boy, the 400, waiting on my elk hunts. Kurt's going to use that for his. Regardless, right there in Iowa, Grizzly Coolers. I mean, I don't really know what else really honestly to say about them other than just that they're super badass, and I'm super pumped that they sponsor this podcast. My guest, I know he's familiar with those coolers as well. Yeah, I mean, there's just, you know, hey, try one, use it, whether it's a hardware that hard stuff, soft stuff, their actual coolers that they've got, whatever you need, they've got it for you. Code WCB, save you a little bit of cash. Black Ovis, super stoked that they're with us. WCB10, right now, that arrow ID, man, I'm still running into guys that are like, gosh, I got to build arrows. Listen, it's okay if you don't have time to do it. I love to do it. But when I don't have the time, it's not a fun job. I like to do it when I've got time. If you don't have time, get on Black Ovis, use your code WCB10, save you some money, pick your shafts out, pick your pink and black fletchings or whatever the hell you want to use, your arrow wraps, whatever. They'll ship them right to your door. All you got to do is punch in your debit or credit card number. They'll build them, they'll ship them, and then you go kill stuff with them. It's a pretty slick deal. Like I said, I love to fletch my own, but here's the thing. I'm busy. This system's pretty badass for those that either A, don't want to fletch arrows, or B, just don't have the time to do it. Another quick rundown, Hunter's Box Club. I can't say what's going to be in this next box, but I can tell you it's pretty badass. Shout out to my homie Devin Leonard over there with Hunter's Box Club. Stoked to have them on board. Yeah, I can't give you too much information, but let's just leave it at this. If you're not getting the box, you're not going to want to miss out on the newest box, so get subscribed. I still believe they're sending the first box free, and then I believe it's still $29.99 after that. Check them out. And last but not least, our homies over at Novix. They've got some cool things coming down the pipe right now. If you go over to Working Class Bowhunter, we have kind of sort of already dropped what they got going on, what's kind of upcoming for this year, lineup, some cool new features. Kurt and the gang did a really good podcast with Frank and all those guys, probably a few weeks ago. If you missed that, go check it out. But like I said, they got some really cool stuff coming out, and we've already kind of alluded to what's going on there, but I know there's going to be a few things coming out here in the near future from them. That's pretty cool. So again, Novix Outdoors, shout out to those guys. Stoked to have them on board. Won't be long and I'll be hanging and banging in the, oh man, I don't know what I'm going to run this year. I don't know if I'm going to run the minis or the regular doubles as far as sticks. Got the Hilo. Yeah, there's a couple combinations I could run. I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do yet, but regardless, I'm going to be excited to get back in my Novix setup. Okay, with that being said, I got to get prepared here. I got to get mentally ready for this. This is a big one. In my short time as a podcast host with CC Hunt Files, I mean, this is pretty much the top of the mountain for me. I don't really know if it gets any better than this, but here we go. Tonight, 9:30 on a Monday night. This will release Wednesday. I'm lucky enough he had nothing better to do than to talk to me at 9:30 at night. The Bo Martonic, owner, operator, badass employee, the only guy that runs the East Meets West Hunt podcast, sometimes known as East Meets North or South Meets East, depending on who you talk to. But nonetheless, my man, good buddy, Bo Martonic, dude, this is like a role reversal. I mean, I don't know what I'm doing right now.
What are you doing by pumping everybody up, acting like I'm going to be this like big, you know, special guest sort of deal, and then
you are
going to be disappointed? You know,
no, you are, you are. Everyone, well, yeah,
this is weird because
it is weird.
I've had you on my podcast for the last 4 years that I've ran,
yes,
like more, yes, times than anybody else that's been on, and I'm used to being the one interviewing you, and now you're leading the show, and I kind of like it.
Well, it's kind of cool. Usually you're asking me about how I almost killed myself in Colorado, and today we're going to go over how you almost killed yourself. So, yes, it is role reversal. But for those who don't know Bo, him and I connected, I don't know, it's been a number of years ago, and immediately became really, really good buddies, and it's I mean, I'll be honest, it's kind of a shit show when we get together, but it's always in good fun, and we talk often. We don't get to see each other as much as we would like to, but Bo, give people the rundown for those that don't know you. A lot of people do. For those that don't, man, you got a lot of cool stuff going on. I mean, between the podcast and, you know, you just hear what, like a month ago, man, you quit your job you've had for the longest time, and dude, you're in the outdoor industry full time. I just want to personally congratulate you. I've been around. I've got to see it. I talk to you damn near daily. I know the hard work, the grind, the effort, the failures, the successes. I mean, I've kind of been along for the ride, I feel like. Dude, plain words, man, I'm fucking super proud of you. It's a tough deal to do what you're doing, and you're thriving at it. So, you know, I know you don't like taking compliments and you're not one to pat yourself on the butt, but let me do it for you here over the air.
Wow, yeah, well, thank you, Clint. But it is funny, I gotta start with the background on like you and me. So like we first met, I guess it's been 6 years ago now.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I don't know, it's been a while.
Yeah, it has.
And we got together like not long after we first got connected,
right.
And immediately we're like, all right, now we're best friends,
right?
We're gonna hang out all the time, and we spent time together. You know, you've come to Pennsylvania multiple times.
Yep,
done some scouting. We've been at different events together.
Oh god, yeah.
I can't even think of. We've been a lot of places, and it's usually there's been, I put rules on it. Like I only hang out with you every 6 months is kind of my rule.
Yeah, because anything that's probably within good.
it takes me off life's track, you know, to go on the right path.
Yeah.
It takes me off God's path of where I should be at. So
that's all
I'm going to say. But no, you've been an awesome buddy of mine for a while now. And you've seen, I mean, I talked to you and I had the idea for the podcast back in early 2018.
Yep.
And you've been there from the beginning. So for those of you that don't know me, I'm from Pennsylvania. Grew up just in a very, very big hunting family. My entire family's just ate up by it, mostly hunting deer, mostly hunting big woods, mountain bucks here in Pennsylvania. And it's like we have a deer camp that it has a tradition that's like no other, as far as everyone gets together every November, everyone uses their vacation from work, take off, hunt during the rut, come back to camp, have some beers, hang out, talk about it, and just and it's just a year-round approach with my family. And I say that because I'm very lucky to grow up in that.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And have, you know, my dad is the one of the, you know, best deer hunters that I know.
Yep.
And he's taught me so much. So I've been very, very grateful just to have that upbringing. And then that kind of, you know, stemmed out of me wanting to expand and hunt some different states, and took me to going out west in 2016 for the first time. and hunting elk, which I, if I remember right, Clint, that was the first year that you started hunting mule deer out west, because we were on the same journey of you trying to kill a mule deer and me trying to kill an elk. And that was another similarity where it took us both exactly 4 years and we killed on the within like 2 weeks of each other. So that was kind of comical.
it really was. We had a running joke. I was at that point in time, I was doing a lot of writing and was starting to write more about Western bow hunting, and Bo was still doing quite a bit of writing, and then had the, you know, the podcast fired up and whatnot, you know, and was kind of getting into, you know, that realm, really taking off. And we got to a point where after a couple years of failure, we both kind of had a heart to heart one day. It was a summer day. It was in the evening. I'll never forget it. I said to Bo, at what point do people pretty much tell us to fucking just hang it up, man? You guys can't kill anything out there. We're tired of hearing you write about it and talk about it, but you actually don't really do anything out there. And there was kind of a weird pause, and Bo's like, well, I'm kind of happy you brought this up, because I've been kind of thinking the same thing. And I mean, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but we kind of need to get something done this year. Well, lo and behold, you know, that year, that was our year. You know, it was the year of the mule deer for me, and the year of the elk for Bo. And yeah, it's pretty funny, because you know, we both were feeling the pressure, mainly pressure on ourselves. You know, not really that we were letting outside world influence it, but you know, I knew how bad you wanted to go kill an elk, and you knew how, but you know, that's all we talked about. I mean, we would start off talking about, you know, women or beer, and within 5 seconds it turned to elk and mule deer, because that's all we could think about. You know, we wanted it so bad. So it was really cool that we both got, you know, I think besides my dad, my next in-reach message was to Bo, and I'm sure I think if I remember correctly, I was right up there at the top of that list, probably right behind your dad whenever you killed your bull. I remember being at work getting that message, and I was on a roller, still working for the county, laying asphalt, and I had to redo that patch. It was pretty well fucked, because I wasn't paying attention to what was going on.
All I remember from that. Well, so let me step back 1 sec to that phone conversation. Like, we were joking about, like, no one's gonna, you know, listen to us or read it. But which, I mean, that's true. But that was beside the point. Like you and I, we're wired similarly in this in this way. And like, you know, we've grown up hunting deer, and this is by in no means saying that, you know, we got it figured out. But we've been doing it for so long that we've, you know, found success in that. And when you put us in a new element, that's like, you feel like a kid that you take the training wheels off the bike for the first time. And I just kept hitting that freaking curb and going over the handlebars and just rubbing my face across that asphalt, hitting drains. Like, there was nothing that was going right, you know, and I had opportunities. I just kept screwing it up. And so when we just kind of got in each other's heads, and we kept just like pumping each other up, like, you got to do it. Like, let's get this done. Let's prove it to ourselves that we can do this. Yep. And if I remember right, you were within a day or two of opening day. I know you were packed in for a while when you killed your buck. And then I killed my bull on the first day that I was there on a 14-day hunt.
Yep.
And it was just like, I remember that in-reach message. And I should go back and look exactly what it said. But I basically said, I fucking killed a bull.
Yeah.
And you had – Your message is back. Like, in-reach, they don't come through like right away.
Right.
But when they do, they come in like a batch. And I had like 5 or 6 from you that were all capital letters with 7,000 exclamation points. Like, fuck yeah, dude. Yeah,
I was going to say, and there would have been a lot of usage of the word fuck, for sure, because I use that. God. I like to use that as a noun, a pronoun, a verb, an adjective. I just pretty much use that as like a daily thing that, you know, that can mean I'm happy, I'm sad, I'm excited, I'm pissed, I'm mad. I mean, it just depends, you know, but I use that pretty much. Nobody uses that word more. Kurt actually coined this. He's like, nobody that I know in the world uses that word more than Devin Leonard and Clint Casper, and it's a race to who uses it the most. But a close second when you're fired up would be, you know, you'd be right there with us, because that's a word we like to use, you know. It's a good word, and it was used a lot in those in-reach messages. I do remember that.
Yeah, we didn't use it in a bad way.
It was all positive,
you know. It was all about. And actually, I think out of the six messages that you sent me, there was only two words in there that weren't the F word.
Exactly. So it was, I was excited.
Verb, pronoun, name. It didn't matter what it was.
Yes.
And it worked. But yeah, I'll remember that moment, like, just, yeah, very strongly. I can remember that exactly. And how pumped up you were for me, and then how pumped I was for you when you killed your deer. I remember I was at work in the office because I hadn't been out there yet, and I was literally jumping up and down. And then I get a call
hours
later when you had got really hurt. And I literally said to you, I said, Clint, like, I've never heard you not, like, have some sort of, like, positivity in your voice.
Oh, yeah.
And you just sounded
that was tough.
A walking dead person.
Yeah. I was talking to you the next day on the walk out. I called you.
That's what it was.
Because I had messaged you that I was in a bad spot that night, you know, and I was – I wanted someone, you know, that had – you had a really good idea of where I was going to be. You hadn't hunted that unit yet. Ironically, this year you were in that unit when you damn near, you know, didn't make it off the mountain, but we'll get to that here later. But, you know, you had an idea of where I was and kind of like I had, you know, I made sure, I always try to make sure four or five people that I'm close with know what unit, where I'm at, just in case something bad happens, you know. And I remember talking to you on the mountain. And then I got a hold of you once I got service, and it would have been that next morning. I was in pretty – I was not in normal Clint high spirits. We'll just leave it at that. That's for sure. That was a very long night. I've never actually heard you worried or there's not many times where you and I actually hear each other be serious, if we're being completely honest. That was one of the first times I ever actually heard you – quote unquote worried, I guess would be, or concerned.
It was full on concerned.
Yeah.
When you said to me, because my brother lived in Colorado at that time.
Yes.
Is your brother anywhere around that he can help me? I'm like, whoa, Clint's asking for help. Like, all right, something's wrong. And then my brother happened to be, he was on a mule deer hunt.
Yeah.
And with my dad.
Well, I was gonna say with your dad.
So I was like, all right, well, I can't get a hold of him, and I'm like trying to figure out who I can call, like what we do to get Clint help. And I could hear it in your voice that it was, and I was, you know, getting all worked up over it. And that doesn't typically happen. Our phone calls that we have are traditionally like, I get off the call and I'm like, I'm not sure if I know anything extra about Clint's life, or we just like laughed and made fun of each other the entire time. And so it's normally not very serious, I guess, is the way
yes.
I put it. But that was very serious.
No, that's for sure. That's for sure, man. Well, just real quick, you know, because it's a huge deal, you know, that you're, you know, hey, dude, you're on your own now. We've unclipped your wings and we've, you know, you're flying now on your own. You're in the outdoor space. You're in the outdoor world. I got to ask, because I know this is going to annoy you and piss you off, and it does me too, but Bo, what's it like to hunt for a living, bro? That's so awesome. You get to hunt for a living. Can you tell us what hunting for a living's like now? Because that's like all you do. You just hunt for money.
Yeah. So it's funny. When I released the podcast, like basically announcing that I was leaving my full-time job and leaving working in the plant and going doing, you know, the podcast stuff full-time, I titled it,
this was awesome.
I titled something about how I quit my job to hunt.
I quit my job to hunt for a living. Yep. Which Kurt,
a joke. Like,
Kurt and I were laughing our asses off because everybody thinks that that's what like people do in the outdoor space is, oh, it must be nice. You get paid to hunt. Like no one gets paid to hunt anything. Like that's not, you know, that's not where anyone makes any money is getting paid to hunt. So it's funny to, you know, to throw that claim around, but what is it like now? You know what I mean? I mean, it's easier, harder, like have you transitioned from like, quote unquote, real job that you've had for a lot of years to like, now this is like the new career you're taking. I mean, how's it been so far? It's still very fresh, obviously. You know, I'm like kind of part-time, I guess you could say like half-time hunting industry, plus I'm still farming and, you know, pressure washing with my buddy. And, you know, I've got a couple different avenues of things that I'm doing. So I'm not full-time just hunting industry, you know, like, but you are now. That's it. I mean, this is it. That's all you got. What's it been like? I mean, just sum it up for people, you know, like how's that transition been? What's been like the biggest thing that's opened your eyes? Like, you know, good, bad, ugly, different, you know, just hit us with whatever's kind of been on your mind as far as how that's all transitioned. Cause it's a big deal. It's a big jump. I mean, it takes, for lack of a better term, it takes a lot of balls to do that, because you quit a job that I know, you know, vacation, how they took care of you. I know pay was good. You know, like I knew a lot about your job. It wasn't some $10 an hour job that you let go of. You know, I mean, it was a great job that anybody and their brother would want to have. Pretty sweet setup. And you left it in the dust and went and did this. So give us a little rundown, man. What's it like?
Yeah, so I'm 2 months into doing this full time now, which still doesn't feel completely real.
Right.
But the biggest thing for me is like, first of all, yeah, even part of my family still thinks like, oh, Bo's just, you know, he's either hunting or he's just right in his house, you know, like that's, but, which is, you know, not the right case whatsoever.
Like, no,
so
no.
Basically, you know, with, East Meets West is mainly a podcast, and then I do writing and I put out educational video content, and then like probably like 6 or 7 other little things on the side, some research for deer data and different things that it all makes up this thing. There's a bunch of stuff that's involved in it and how I essentially make money off of it. But what the hardest thing that I've learned so far is like, one, I had a feeling of guilt I still kind of have it, like for the first couple months here, of like that I'm supposed to be doing something else.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was so used to going to job,
going to a job
7 a.m.
Yep.
To 4 to 5 p.m. every night. And then I come home and do this stuff on the side. And it's like, it's weird when I don't have that and I work for myself. And I think the hardest part for me is knowing when to not work. Like, because, because I just like, I see, I have all these ideas and things I want to do. And this would be a cool video to make. This is a cool podcast to do and all these things. And I start doing it. And as Clint said earlier, you know, I'm a one man show. So I do all that. I do subcontract out a lot of my video stuff, which Justin Mueller does an incredible job on.
Yep,
I'm
absolutely
not that talented.
Shout out to,
time to do that.
Shout out to Justin. We actually, WCB right now is looking for someone who wants to intern or potentially do some camera work. It'd be awesome if Justin's twin would reach out to us and be like, fuck yes, let's do it. Shout out to him. He does great work. If you're not following that guy and checking out stuff that he does for Bo, and I know he does stuff for other people, but primarily stuff for you, he does a fucking killer job. Justin is the man when it comes to that. So shout out to him. I'm going to get him on this podcast sooner than later, because I do want to talk to him about that life, the life he lives behind a lens and doing cool shit like he does for Bo and other people. But yeah, just real quick, shout out to Justin, man. He's a badass dude and even more badass behind a lens. But yeah, definitely want to get him on the podcast. Yeah. He's he's a killer. He's not just a camera guy. That dude knows how to find his way around the mountains and in the big woods. And yeah, he's pretty all around skilled at damn near, it seems like, about everything he does.
Yeah. And before I go back to what I was talking about, Justin, I just have to say, like, yeah, I got super lucky with him and I meeting through taking this hunting photographer course and like us linking up, because he is a hunter. He doesn't hunt much for himself anymore, but he's on so many hunts and learned tactics. Like I bounce ideas off of him. He gives me suggestions.
Oh yeah.
We work together well. Yep. And he's you know, produced some amazing films that I've put out on my YouTube channel that he's done. And he is the guy behind it. Like, I just, all I do is just be there in front of the camera. Like, he does it. I give him all that credit. But anyway, so like, going back to like kind of like the workflow and doing this, like, so the biggest thing is like figuring out how to like sometimes be like, okay, I just need to shut things down. And you right. know, when you know, social media is a big part of every with the business and everything else, being able to like step away from that stuff when you're not doing it, just like yep. you know, not feel like you have to be constantly working. Cause the last 4 years I had a full-time job and then I did this on the side.
Right.
And it was like, all I did was work. And I'm like, you know, try to find time to just enjoy things, be with friends and family and stuff too. And, but it, you know, I'm not complaining whatsoever because it's been freaking awesome from the standpoint of, I actually can like, the things that I'm, you know, dreaming up or wanting to do or whatever, yeah. like I can make plans and do yeah, that and,
absolutely.
And do these sorts of things. And kind of, it's been really cool. I mean, just got back from Montana on a bear hunt and yep. like that kind of stuff. Like I never could do spring bear before,
right.
but I didn't have the time.
Right.
And what, that was one of my like driving factors was, you know, I loved hunting. So like everyone, at least a lot of people's dreams of like when they're younger is like working in the hunting industry because you like hunting. You know, that was a part of it, but at the same time, I wanted to have the freedom to when I can work as hard as I want to when I need to, yep. but also if I want to get out and I want to go on a hunt or there's a cold front in Ohio and I want to yep. travel over there and hunt for a couple of days, like I can do that. And yep. that was like a huge driving factor, is that lifestyle for me to absolutely. Do it. And, but to do it, it wasn't like I could just like, you know, drop. I, like Clint said, I had a really good job. I had
oh, yeah.
Benefits. I had 4 weeks paid vacation. Like I had a pretty good, I'm not complaining about that at all, but it just wasn't what made me like just get fired up. And so when I started knowing that I wanted to do this, I was like, okay, what I need to do is get rid of as many expenses as I possibly can. And, you know, I paid off my truck and paid off my student loans and got rid of some of my toys that I had. You know, I had a side by side and I had all this other stuff. And I was like, okay, I need to get rid of all that shit and just keep it as bare bones as possible because yep. I rather would have a lifestyle than accumulating things. And so that was something that took, you know, a while to be able to get to that point. And then finally, it actually made the decision last September. I was trying to figure out if I should or I shouldn't. I was going back and forth. And,
yep.
And I was actually talking to Mark Kenyon from Wired to Hunt. I was like, Mark, how did you know, like, when you did this, you know, 8 years ago or whatever? And he's like, man, if you, you know, you got things figured out that you think you could do it, he's like, just put a date on the calendar and just stick to it. Like, just,
yeah.
you know, once you have that drop dead date, and that's what I did. And then all of a sudden that I knew it was my last day of work and I was done and had to figure out health insurance and everything else. But, it's
that's really never, cool. That's not fun.
No, it's not. It's not everything everyone said about self-employment and the taxes and all the other stuff that you got to take. Oh, it's real, man. It's there,
but it really is.
I don't know. I'm fired up about it. I like this kind of fits my lifestyle and being able to do this. And, you know, if I need to do anything else on the side, like I'll do whatever yeah. I need to. And that's what's cool about what you're doing. You know, with you doing the farming and doing this podcast and writing and helping your buddy with power washing. Like there's, if you want change in your life, you can do it. And it's just, you got to put your mind to it. And it's just like the little steps every day. It's not like it just all of a sudden I was like, oh, I'm done and I had no plan. It was just like constant little things every day to kind of put yourself in that, like you do for hunting and you're getting ready for whatever, whether it's Western hunting or deer hunting, you shoot your bow every day. It's one little step. Maybe you go to the gym every day. That's one little step. And it might only be 20 minutes. It might only be 30 minutes, but you just like do these little things and you do them all the time. And then you get further ahead. And that's something that I've been very, I guess I'm very happy with how it's ended up to this point. Still very new, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, man, I know you'll make it. There's no doubt in my mind, dude. Like I said, super, super fucking proud of you. You know, I've kind of got to be along for the ride, you know, from the original conversations that whenever you first kind of bounced it off my head and was like, hey, what do you think about this, man? I'd like to start a podcast. And then, you know, I think it was probably last October, November, whenever you told me, well, got some big news. And I kind of had an idea of what you were going to say. You know, I figured you were going to say you were pregnant and, you know, we didn't know who the father was going to be, but you were pregnant. And then you're like, no, that's not it, Clint. Actually, I'm going to go full time. I was like, well, that was going to be my second guess, which, you know, hey, I was close. So top two. But no, I mean, I kind of figured that was coming. I saw that coming. You know, I'm super lucky with this podcast. You know, I've got to be a part of, you know, you and Kurt's pretty much life for the last couple of years, and I've got to watch you guys, not even knowing that I was even going to have an opportunity to have a podcast, but I've got to watch and see what you guys have done. You know, Kurt and I talk every day, you and I talk every day, you know, I know what goes on behind the scenes. A lot of people don't get to see or know what I know. And it's a shame because a lot of people would have a lot more respect for guys like Kurt, guys like you that have built a brand, built, you know, a podcast from the ground up. You know, I mean, people have no clue, like even like with WCB, like Eric does all the merchandise. He's doing, you know, shirts, hats, blah, blah. That's his main gig. It's unreal. People have no fucking clue how busy that guy is with just that aspect. That's not even counting being a part-time owner or being a partial owner and a partial host, but just the full-time gig of he does all the merchandise. Like, and then you know, you're on your own. Like, you ain't got no, you know, you're doing the whole dig from start to finish by yourself. Like, you know, so it's like, I've got to watch that. And I've got to see, you know, a couple really good buddies, you know, you and Kurt and Eric build these things from the ground up and what you've done. And the main ingredient, in my opinion, it's you guys have been starving for success. And it's not, you know, everyone says, oh, you got to grind. Yeah. Yes. You know, I use the term, I love the grind. I love, but there's a difference between a guy that is grinding and a guy that is starving for success in life via, like, for example, a job. You know, I mean, I've watched, you know, you transition this podcast from, hey, I want to do this to, hey, I want this to be my life. And it went from, I'm going to grind at this and make it something to, dude, I'm starving for this to be what I do for it. Like, this is it, man. Like there's a transition there where it went from A to Z, you know, it went from, this is cool to, dude, I'm going to do this for, this is it. Like, this is what I was put here to do, to be, you know, to starve for success like that, man. That's a whole nother level of quote unquote grinding. And I've watched you do that. I've watched Eric and Kurt and the gang, you know, build up WCB and make it what it is. Like, It's really cool. I've been very lucky to be a part of both those and be able to kind of, you know, take things from what I've seen and then put it in, you know, like, I mean, I couldn't have drawn up kind of better, I guess you could say, teachers or mentors as far as the outdoor industry, whether it's writing, podcasting, you know, I mean, we all bounce ideas. I mean, I talk to you daily, Kurt daily. It's just, you know, I'm always able to bounce ideas and bounce things and learn. And it's just been really cool. It's funny. You guys both took the plunge this year. You both went full time. You know, it just goes to show though, you know, you went from, man, I'm going to grind at this and make it something, to, you know what? Like, I'm fucking starving for this to be like my life. And it's been cool to see that happen. And like I said, man, couldn't be any more proud of you, dude. It's freaking awesome. I'm actually, you know, we're going to transition into what I really want to talk about for a while here on this podcast is, man, I'm happy you're still here. You know, I'm really happy you didn't die last year. So before we dive into this, you know, Bo had a very scary incident last year in Colorado. Ironically, the same unit that I damn near slid off a mountain to my death, same unit, almost exact locations, actually. You got hit.
Yeah, just over the hill.
Yeah, just basically, literally. You got hit, you didn't about fall off a mountain, but instead you got hit with the dreaded freaking altitude sickness, and it hit you bad, really bad. And, you know, a lot of people, man, love to hunt elk, love to hunt mule deer, the high country. You know, Colorado is my favorite place in the world. Anyone that knows me or has heard me ramble on or reads anything that I write, you'll figure out real quick, high country mule deer, that's it for me. I mean, that's where if I had one animal to hunt the rest of my life, it's going to be high country bucks. I'm fucking ate up with it. I love it. But it's dangerous. I mean, 100%, it is dangerous. And people think of danger in the high country of lightning. You fall off a mountain. You run into a bear or a lion or something. A lot of people do not take what Bo's going to talk about as serious as they should. And we're going to dive into what Bo experienced. Now, mind you, you've been out, you know, Bo's been out to Colorado numerous freaking times. So this isn't his first rodeo. Just goes to show that this can hit anybody. It can happen to anybody. But I want you to take us through from A to Z, your Colorado mule deer experience last year, how it all went down. And just really dissect it, because I think there's a lot to take away from what took place. I know you've said there's things you thought you might have been able to, could have done maybe different, or some precautionary of, you know, hey, maybe this was a warning sign I didn't see, or maybe I should have looked at this a little different. You know, I want to run through it, man, because coming into hunting season, everyone's gung ho right now. You know, everyone's training, everyone's getting ready. You know, you got all these hunts, you're planning, you're prepping. Bo was in a holy shit, I'm in a bad spot position. You know, had to hit the panic button, basically, and rightfully so. It happens. I mean, it's real. You know, you hear people talk about it, but a lot of people think it'll never happen to them. And I want to shed light on, you're a guy that's a regular bow hunter in the Colorado high country. You've done it many, many times. You've been out there many times. Your brother lives out, you know, it's not like this was your first rodeo. So take us through it and let's dissect it, man, because this is something that, you know, I take very serious. You took very serious prior to this, and you probably even take it more serious now, just because of what happened and how potentially life-threatening something like this can be. You know, I mean, it's not just I got a headache and I feel like I'm going to throw up, as you experienced and as your story is going to unfold here. But take it away, Bo. Let's just start from the beginning and kind of break it down for everybody.
Well, first I want to say it's not as cool to say you almost died from altitude sickness as it is falling off a cliff.
I mean, it really isn't. You're right.
It sucks. It sucks to say. I just launched my new film called High Altitude, and it's about this hunt, and it goes through, like, it breaks down a bunch of, like, the thing with altitude sickness and some of the stuff with it. Well, I've had a couple comments on there that guys have said, well, if you can't handle the mountain, you shouldn't be there. You need to toughen up, like that sort of thing. I'm like, well, right. I guess I should have expected that.
Right.
Coming from, from, you know, an altitude part. But what you said is, what you said is important is, I have been at altitude. I've hunted 12,000 feet before.
Absolutely.
And I've never had issues before.
Yep.
And what I've learned from doing research with talking to some different doctors since then, like I did a bunch of research before this film, and, you know, and also just from my own knowledge of trying to figure out what happened.
Right.
And altitude doesn't discriminate. It doesn't care.
No. Doesn't give a shit
how good a shape you're in. It doesn't care how much money you make. It doesn't care about anything. Like the mountain doesn't. It treats, you know, it basically it can affect some people more than others, and right. It can change at any time based off your body condition. So I went into this hunt with a really like just drained immune system, which is something that I should have recognized ahead of time. But I want to say this up front, because this is why it affected me personally more than it would other people, because I took a lot of precautions going into it.
Right.
But I ended up finding out after the hunt, I had both a sinus infection and mono. I had lost like 35 pounds prior to this hunt, and a lot of it came from me working a couple different jobs and not sleeping and letting my body run down. So that was a very important takeaway for me, is like making sure that you recover when you need to, and and taking care of things when you're training up front. Now, training and, you know, getting in shape does help with this stuff and does help with altitude. But when you're coming from the East, you're coming from the Midwest, and you don't live at altitude in the mountains. Like we have, you know, we have the Appalachian Mountains here in Pennsylvania, but it's not, they're not high, you know, they might be 3,000 feet elevation at some high points. Like it's not, you're not talking about above 8,000 feet, let alone the high country where you're above 10,000 feet up to 13,000 feet. So it's a whole nother world. So I'll tell you what I did going into this hunt. I was looking forward to hunting mule deer because, one, you and I have talked about hunting mule deer, and you were ate up about it. You loved mule deer hunting. That's all you wanted to do. And I was into elk, and I didn't want to even think about mule deer until I accomplished a goal with the elk.
Right.
The mule deer have always been in the back of my mind. So I was like, I wanted to do this. I knew it was going to be a difficult hunt. And I think, you know, I think we're all guilty of making it sound super sexy to do these hunts.
The reality
of it is it's really, really difficult 99% of the time.
Yeah.
And it's hard, and it's very unforgiving country. There's no picture that can do it justice.
Yeah, I was gonna say social media, magazines, podcasts, we all romanticize the high country, because when you get home and you look back at the pictures and you think back, it is badass. Don't get me wrong. But it is a total ride on the fucking struggle bus every second and every step of every day when you are hunting at 13, 14, 12,000 feet above timberline, high country. I mean, nothing you do is easy. Not taking a shit, not sleeping, nothing. There's nothing you do that is easy up there. So Bo couldn't, you know, you couldn't be more correct on that statement, because we do. And I try to make that claim, like, I love it and I talk about it and I try to not romanticize it, even though it comes off that way, because it is the most forgiving, dangerous place that I go every single year. And that's just the brutal reality of it.
Yeah, no, it's for sure, and I'll lay out like kind of like the whole background on altitude sickness and some takeaways for everyone listening here afterward. But I'll just like kind of tell the story first.
Yep.
And so going into this hunt, knew we were going to be hunting up high, and my buddy Michael that I was hunting with actually was in the hospital, and he had high altitude pulmonary edema in New Mexico while hunting high country mule deer before, where my cousin Mason had to take him to the hospital where Michael didn't want to go, but he was coughing up blood and he was having all these problems, and his blood oxygen level was so low that if he would have been someone that was out of shape or, you know, unfit or not healthy, that he probably would have died. Like, he was in that bad of shape. And that's where I first kind of got it in my head, like, this is something serious. I need to take advantage, you know, I need to take seriously. And so Michael, that's in my head. So going into this hunt, Michael had, I don't even know if I'm allowed to say this, but basically he got prescriptions for all of us.
it's fine.
Which is, something that helps with high altitude.
Right.
And it's basically a prescription medication to be able to help with it. And so we had that, and we actually rented an Airbnb at like 8 or 9,000 foot elevation for 2 days prior to going in and hunting so we could acclimate. So basically, once you're above 8,000 feet, you should take time without, you know, high energy exertion and just let your body get used to being at that altitude.
Yep.
Because acclimating is by far the best organic way that you can you get used to it and that you can reduce the chances of this happening to you. So that's what we did. We did that and did some light hiking, a little bit of glassing. You know, this was 5 days before the season started, and we're driving around at altitude.
Which is super smart. I mean, realistically, like when I heard you guys were doing that, I've thought about my own deals. One nice thing about driving out there is you are getting acclimated as you're driving. But there's been, I mean, I'm not going to lie. 2 years ago, I jumped off a plane at 11:30 at night, met up with Devin at Salt Lake City Airport, and an hour and a half later was hiking up to an ungodly, unforsaken, frickin' hellhole in the high country, hiked all night, got there at 5:30 a.m., slept for literally 20 minutes, and then was glassing. And I think back to that. I mean, I got on a plane in Pittsburgh at 600 feet sea level and was at 8 or 9,000 feet less than 12 hours later. Like, not a smart idea, not a good move on my end. Sounded great to Devin and I at the time, but then I hear you talk, and after what happened to you this year, I think back and I'm just like, holy shit, I'm lucky. Like, I am really lucky, because I've done that a couple times and I'm just like, man, like, I'm playing with fire because I'm not getting acclimated. I'm jumping off a plane and diving into a hunt because I'm pumped, I'm excited. Like, realistically, stupid move on my part, and I'll be the first to admit that. Like, those of you that are listening to this, what they did by acclimating for, you know, 2 days, very smart move. Very, very smart move.
Yeah.
Not a smart move to jump off a plane like I have done and head right into a hunt. Just a little disclaimer, because you brought that up, and I'm just sharing my own, basically, fuck ups that it didn't end with me in a hospital, or it didn't end with me having altitude sickness, but it very well could have. And it's something I'm going to be a little more, I guess, lenient on time in the future, jumping off a plane and getting acclimated and not just heading straight into a hunt, because sooner or later that will bite me in the ass. And I'm going to really try to avoid, doing that from here on out, because I mean, honestly, you're only going to play with fire so long before you get burnt, and I will get burnt doing that. I've been very lucky that I haven't ended up in the hospital like what you did this year.
Yeah, and then Michael, like, his situation was that he drove out there, but he drove and they went. They literally parked the truck, had their backpacks packed already, and hiked up in to camp, and that's where it happened to him. Yep. And so that's why, you know, we were doing this. We were acclimating. We were trying to get used to it. But I was feeling sick on the drive out. And I actually went and got a COVID test. I thought I had COVID.
Right.
And I was like, man, I don't know why I just feel so shitty. And I was like, well, screw it. Like, you know, you get your ego gets in the way.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'll be fine. Like, you don't be a pussy. Like, you're fine. Just do it. And so we hiked in. It was 3 days before the season or 2 days before the season opened, something like that. And we started hiking, and right away I was like struggling to breathe, but that's typical. Like,
right.
Everyone struggles with altitude a little bit. Sometimes, like, you'll get shortness of breath, a little headache.
Yep.
You know, you take some ibuprofen or, you know, anything like that, and you're like, all right, I'll be all right. And that's mild. Like, that's typical. And I didn't think anything of it, but one thing that I kept noticing was, so I think you wear one too, Garmin watch.
Yep.
And I was paying attention to my heart rate, and it was just like through the roof. Like, I felt like someone that had smoked cigarettes my entire life and then put up my lungs in a clamp and then tried to hike.
Yep.
And I was struggling. I couldn't do it. And I got about like 2.5 miles in, and I said to Mason and Michael, because I could tell they were just like struggling by going painfully slow with me. And I was like, you guys go ahead. I'll meet you at camp tonight. And we had, I don't know, well, you've been in there 7 or 8 miles,
right?
Back in, and I was like,
that's a long haul into that unit. Going to where you were going, that's a long. I mean, it's a this spot. You know, I mean, it'll take anybody a good half a day to get in there, and it's a gradual climb, but you are, yeah, you start at, what, about, what is it, 6, 7 thousand?
I don't remember. Yeah, something like that.
You're gaining like 5,000 to 6,000 feet from where you park the truck to where you're going to camp slash hunt slash start everything out. So, I mean, it's definitely, you know, it's a gradual, it's not like it all happens in an hour, but still though, that's a lot. 5,000, 6,000 feet.
Oh
yeah. And even yeah, going slow, taking your time like you were, cause I remember talking to you when you were packing in, I remember messaging you a couple times cause there is some service there. And then obviously we got the inReaches, and I remember asking how you were doing, because I had talked to you on the way out in the truck. I knew you weren't feeling the greatest, and I was a little worried about that. I mean, I remember distinctly saying, "Hey, man, you know, just be easy, be careful," like, because I've made that hike. That's a unforgiving, rugged country over there. And I remember you saying you told him to go ahead, and you were just going to take your time. I thought, well, that's smart, you know, just go at your own pace, you know. But I was a little worried about that though, because starting out you already were kind of like not feeling the greatest, and that's a very rough place to be, not at 100% per se.
Yeah. So that was kind of the first warning sign. But once I made another couple miles, and I was like, I can't go any further.
Right.
I was like, hey, I texted Mason and Michael. I was like, hey, I'm gonna set up camp here, and I'll meet you there tomorrow, you know, just do some scouting or whatever. And they're like, yeah, no problem. So set up camp. And I think, yeah, this was the first time. So I was just struggling really bad. Like I was struggling breathing, just couldn't get my act together. And finally I was just like, you know what, Justin? I said, let's go back down. Let's go back down to the truck. I was like, I can't. I feel like something's not right.
Right.
I remember checking I could check my blood oxygen on my watch too, and typical is above 95, and
right.
I was flirting around like 89. It wasn't like anything crazy, but it wasn't good. And I was like, you know what? We still got a couple of days before the opener.
Yep.
Let me go back down. So drop back down 6,000-7,000 feet, and that's kind of what, you know, we were gonna do. And I still wasn't. You know, I still wasn't feeling good when I dropped down, which
right.
is normally once you drop elevation, you start to feel better. And
yes.
I wasn't. So I was like, called my other cousin that had all these like natural remedies, and we were trying to figure it out. And Michael had all the prescription medication with him. So I didn't even have any of that to help with the acclimation. So I was like trying to figure it out. And then finally after, spending the night down lower, I was like, all right, I'm going to try again. And head in. And at this point it was, I guess it might've been a day or two I spent down there, and then
yeah.
I was like, all right, it's opening day. I need to go in, start hiking in. And I struggled worse this time. Like just, I was dying going in, and I was like, but I'm determined to get to camp. And I got to camp and I tried cooking dinner, and I couldn't figure out how to work my jet boil. Like, so this was another sign, like my motor skills, my brain wasn't working right.
Yep.
Like I couldn't figure it out. And this is what's scary. Like if you're by yourself, like how you hunt a lot, like you can't recognize when you start doing these things
yep.
on your own.
Yep.
I had Justin there just being like, you all right, man? Like what's
right.
going on? And I remember at first I was like, how do I look? And I think he was trying to like keep me calm. He's like, oh, you look okay. And I'm like, I feel like shit. He's like, all right, well, honestly, he's like, you look white. Like, you don't
right.
look good. You can't
right.
figure anything out.
Right.
It's taking you forever. So I was like, all right, I'm going to lay in my tent. So I laid in my tent, and it was like, I don't know, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And I remember the coyotes just started howling all around tent. It was daylight. And I was like, well, geez, I can get up and grab my bow. And I get up and I walk outside the tent, and I couldn't even like stand up. Everything was like spinning around me and blurry. And I'm like, all right, I can't do this. I got to go back inside and tan again. And I laid down and I fell asleep, and I woke up just like choking, like just coughing and choking. And I checked my blood oxygen level, and I was at 71,
Oof.
which for anyone that doesn't know, like if you stay in the 70s for a period of time, it can cause permanent brain and lung damage.
Yeah, not good.
And I was like, all right, this is not good. Like I need to go down. I need to go to the hospital. Like I can't do this. And I was struggling even getting some of my necessities packed away to go back down to the truck. Ended up going back down, piking out again, and went to the nearest hospital, which was like a couple hours away, and walked into the ER, and immediately all the signs of altitude sickness sounds like freaking COVID. So they threw me in like this cell, and they came in with suits and everything. Actually I skipped one part that was important. As I was hiking out, I got a text on the InReach from Michael that said Mason killed a buck. And I was like, it was like the most painful thing for me, not from the standpoint I couldn't be there to help and be there like through enjoying it, because Mason is an absolute killer. He's a diehard mule deer hunter, and I just wanted to be there with him when he did that and help be able to pack out the meat.
Oh, for
and
sure.
Knowing that I was no help was just painful. So anyways, I was in the hospital, and they got me hooked up on oxygen, and they did all this stuff and determined again I didn't have COVID, and went through this whole process, and then I got discharged sometime at like 4 a.m. Went to a hotel room, and Justin got a hotel room for me, and I meet up with Justin. This tells you the kind of guy he is. He's like, all right, I'm heading back to the trailhead. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, I'm gonna go help those guys pack meat out tomorrow. I was like, holy shit, man, like really, you've been up like all night and you're gonna drive back through? And he drove all the way back to trailhead, hiked through the night or whatever was left of the night, got there in the morning, you know, the whatever, how far back in it was. I was telling you, way back in there.
Oh,
met those guys at camp.
That's a good 10, 11 mile. I mean, that's deep. Yeah. Yeah, that's not far from where I killed.
He got all the way in there. And actually, they were camped the same spot you were, so you know that.
Yep.
And then went in and helped him pack out the meat. And then I ended up the next day driving back to the trailhead, meeting them there as they packed everything out, and getting to see, you know, Mason with and they were oh my gosh, they were freaking soaked. Because so Mason and Michael, they literally got a, if you remember, if anybody was in Colorado last year, opening couple days there, an actual like monsoon went through and ridiculous weather. Everything was soaked. They all had good rain gear, but didn't put it on until after they were soaked. And their boots were sloshing, like just terrible conditions. And Mason killed that buck like in a break in the storm. And then, you know, packed out being all wet and soaked. And they were just like, you know, beat down and tired too. And it was awesome to be able to be there at the trailhead with them. But it was a really tough experience from the standpoint of me of being like, I wanted to be there for it. I looked forward to this hunt for so long.
Well, yeah, you spent.
It was ruined by that. And they told me I couldn't go back above 8,000 feet elevation for the rest of the trip.
Yep.
And if anybody knows, you can't hunt high country mule deer, you know,
at 8,000 feet.
The high country is above that. Yeah. So I did have an elk tag, and I was like, well, I'll hunt elk lower if I could find a spot, which the unit didn't have much. But, you know, long story short, we ended up, after Mason killed his buck, finding a spot lower in the unit and went in to hunt elk. And I'll be honest, like, so it was probably more of like their wintering ground because it was lower.
Right.
And I don't think there's been an elk there since 1968. But
damn.
it was difficult. And then finally I started feeling better and went up a little bit higher, but camped low and got an elk and almost killed a bull. I shouldn't say almost killed a bull. I wasn't like drawn back on him or anything, but I was within 60 yards of a big herd bull on the only 2 days I got to hunt at the end of the trip. And which was super cool, to be able to have that experience and be able to like savor a little bit of it. But it, I'll be honest, it took a lot of mental, like how can like, trying to stay positive in that situation was difficult.
Tough. Well, yeah, you got work at that time. You're still at your you know, your job beforehand. You took off time for that. You burned points in Colorado on this really, really good mule deer unit on a mule deer tag. You know, I mean, you've got your cousin and one of your best friends kills a buck. You don't get to experience 90% of that. I mean, all these things are running around in your head. I mean, it's easy to go into a hole of misery and self-pity and deflation because of what's going on there. I mean, there's a lot of, for lack of better terminology, fucked up things taking place inside your head and out in the real world that you can't control. You know, not many people are going to stay positive or be able to kind of keep it together. And I know I was pretty impressed. I mean, I know you're a positive guy. I talk to you every day, but I was pretty impressed with your high spirits because I'll be honest. I mean, the cards you were dealt on that deal were pretty freaking rough. About everything that could have went wrong for you. So, you know, it's something to be said, like, hey, you know, you're trying to suck out and savor a little bit of something out of it, which it was great you got into that bull. You know, I remember being on Google Earth and Onyx and trying to talk to buddies. I was trying to find any leads for you on elk or mule deer down low because that's all you had to work with. I was blanking out. I had another buddy trying to help me, help you. He was blank. You know, it's a unit not built for that 8,000 and lower stuff. No. You know, it's just, there's just not much there. You know, it was very hard to try to, you know, I was scratching my head trying. I'm like, man, how can I felt useless to you because it was like everything I'm checking into and trying to figure out, it either wasn't there or elk weren't there, mule deer weren't there. You know, it just, every lead I got was weird, striking out, you know, but I was trying. I know you had multiple buddies trying to help you in any way that you could, but it's almost like it was a helpless thing because, you know, I know where elk and where mule deer are at in that unit, and I couldn't send you there because you physically couldn't go live there. You know, you couldn't go up above 8,000 feet. So it was super frustrating, even on my end, let alone being in your shoes. You know, I'm just a guy in Ohio trying to help you. And it was like, oh man, I was like losing sleep over it. Cause I'm just like, oh my God, like I wanted to do something to try to help you get into animals. And it's like, man, you can't hunt elk where they're not there. And you can't hunt mule deer if they're not there. And it's like everything you could hunt safely, there just wasn't game there to be hunted, you know? So hats off for you for staying positive and not completely just losing your freaking mind, because a lot of people, I don't think anybody would have found any silver lining or any fun in any of that. And you found a way to do that. So, you know, hats off to you for that, because that was definitely a test of your mettle there, being in the shape and position you were in. There's no doubt.
Well, no, and I will say, like, it's super important to have like a really good support system. Like I have with you, with Mason and Michael, like, those guys. So after Mason killed his buck, so obviously Mason killed a buck, but Michael still had a tag.
Right. Yeah.
And he willingly Michael still went got a tag. Hunted lower.
Yep.
With me. Yep. Just to like be there to support me when I was like, guys, go back in the freaking high country and kill another buck. I was like, get away. You know, for me, I'm not a good luck right now. Like, don't just get away. And they were like, no, we're staying with you. We're going to do this. We're going to do this together. And that is amazing. And the fact you were out there trying to help me, and like everyone that like that, I can't, you know, I'm super grateful for being able to have that. And it, but you really, it's so difficult to get out of your own mind because you can't just get so down, but you have to, because like, it's like when you can't do anything about it, the only thing you can do is try to make the best of it. Yep. I remember, and I broke the rule of the doctor. I did go a little bit above 8,000 feet at one point, but I was like, all right, I literally found roads on the maps, was like, okay, where can I walk flat? I'm not using much energy.
Right.
If I need to get back and get down quick, that I can. And like, was like still hunting mule deer and elk through like this timber. It was like very low success, but it got me out there and it got me doing it. So like that was like, and then once I like felt like I recovered, and that's when I started climbing hills again. I was still lower, but you know, with like chasing elk at that point.
Right.
And it
at least you were back in the game.
Yeah. I felt good as far as being back in the game and being able to to do that. And one thing that I found was a flaw. So I always create a hunt plan for any of my hunts where I have like your main area you want to go to.
Yep.
I have a backup area. I have a backup area again, another backup area. I have five backup areas at my main spot, but I didn't have any of them that was at lower elevation,
right.
Mostly because there wasn't much there. But that was something that I learned. And I think anybody that's like going to a unit out west is like always having backup plans at different elevations. In case that something like this happens, so you don't completely ruin your whole hunt. Cause like, it wasn't an option for me to completely throw in the towel and just be like, oh, I'm done. Like, I'm going to figure out what I can do, even if it's low odds success, just to know that I gave it my all and did it. But at the same time, I do want to say that, especially if you are someone that's like very strong minded, at some point when you're having these symptoms that are bad and you got to let your ego go.
Yep.
And do what's better for you. What's more important is coming home to your family safe and being able to do that. Like, who gives a shit what anybody else says, whatever, like, they're not in your shoes. Take care of yourself and make sure that that's the situation, because it's no one else's, I don't know. It's just that was the hardest thing for me was,
oh, yeah.
I kept telling myself, like, I kept questioning myself, like, am I being a baby about this? Like, is this really that bad?
Yep.
And I'm glad that, that I made the decision and Justin helped me make that decision that I needed to go get help. And so I'd like to, Clint, if you're all right with it, kind of go through a little bit of like symptoms of altitude sickness and talk to people what they can do about it, if that's all right.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I want you to give a breakdown of maybe what you could have done different or you think potentially could have maybe, personally, I think it was going to hit you whether you liked it or not, but I think maybe some signs were there. For me, when you told me, I talked to you and you dropped down an elevation, and I remember asking how you were doing, and you're like, man, I don't know. I don't think I feel that much better. That to me was very alarming, because I know for a fact, if you drop elevation, you should immediately start to feel some relief and feel better. And so that was very alarming to me that you were not feeling better. And I know the hope was you were eventually going to feel better, but I was concerned with that. I was not super surprised the next day to hear from you again, dude, I'm heading to the truck. This is not good. I can't say I was shocked by that, because it was alarming that immediately you weren't feeling a little better. But no, absolutely. Man, you brought up a good point as far as the ego. I've said this before, and I've had to do this myself. I've seen badasses like Brian Barney do it, on hunts. Sometimes you got to check that fucking ego at the door. The mountains do not give a shit. They don't care how bad you want it. They don't care how tough you are. They don't care. And sometimes you're at a point where you've got to check your ego. And I've always said, when I go on these hunts, I try to leave my ego in the truck, because, your ego can get you in a lot of trouble, especially on a high country hunt, whether it's lightning, whether it's altitude sickness, whether it's getting into shit you shouldn't be into as far as like steepness or rock bands and cliff, just stuff that's dangerous to be in that you don't have good footing, or if you fall to your death, etc. You brought up a very good point, and I just want to touch on that. I wanted to touch on that because that's something that I think a lot of people are like, oh yeah, man, it is what it is, I'm just gonna go for it. Yeah, okay, you're just gonna go for it, and then you end up freaking not making it home off the mountain because you didn't check your fucking ego at the door. Like Bo said, there ain't no, I've seen a lot of big mule deer and a lot of big bulls. There ain't a one yet I've seen that's worth risking, not coming home for. So just keep that in mind, leave the ego in the truck, leave it on the plane, however the hell you get to your hunt. leave the ego there. Don't take it on the mountain with you, because it can put you in a bad spot really quick. And like we've both said on this podcast, the mountain does not give a shit. I mean, they really doesn't. They don't care if you got kids at home. They don't care how old you are. They don't care. You know, I mean, that's just the brutal reality of it. But by all means,
And I was just gonna say, like, and to that point, I mean, it doesn't mean that, like, okay, say you're on a hunt and you see an elk on that other mountain and you're like, I don't feel like going over there. That's a different story.
Right. Absolutely.
That's not.
Yeah. Safety.
You know, there's a difference between working hard and your safety.
Yes. Yes.
Involved with it.
Yeah.
And,
yep.
And so I have a couple notes I had written down here. So, like, altitude sickness, what it is its barest form is caused from low oxygen.
Yep.
And you can be at risk for that anything over 8,000 feet elevation. And there's three different types of altitude sickness. There's just acute mountain sickness.
Yep.
And that's the mildest form. It's very common. I mean, it almost feels kind of like a hangover where you're a little bit of dizziness, headache, muscle aches, nausea. That's
if you
not
do
really
get altitude,
about.
Yeah. If you do get altitude sickness, this is the one you want, because realistically, you're going to get over it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of people have that one.
Yep.
And like, and you get over it as you acclimate.
Yep.
And then it starts to get to high altitude pulmonary edema, and that's when you start building up fluid in your lungs, and that can actually be life threatening.
Yeah, not
and
good.
And that's the most common cause of death from altitude sickness, is that one. And then the most severe form is high altitude cerebral edema, which happens when there's actually fluid in your brain. And you need medical attention right away, obviously, with that. But some symptoms: headache, dizziness, nausea, vomiting, fatigue and loss of energy, shortness of breath, problems with sleeping, loss of appetite. Those are just a few that come to mind. And as I said, anybody can develop altitude sickness. It doesn't matter how fit, young, healthy you are. Even Olympic athletes can struggle with it.
Yep.
I mean, even football players, when they go play at Denver, there were certain players that couldn't even play there. And that's not even that high, you know. So that's something to know. Your chance of getting altitude sickness really depends on a couple different things. How quickly you move up to higher elevation, how high you actually go up, the altitude where you sleep at. So, like, one rule of thumb is – climb high, sleep low. So if you're going up higher, come back down to sleep a little bit lower. And then some other factors, some guidelines I can think of, like, as far as for acclimating, is start your journey below 10,000 feet. So if you have to fly or drive somewhere that's higher up, stop at a destination that's lower for at least a full day before going any higher. And if for some reason, for time or anything, that you can't do that, cetazolamide, one of the names of it is Diamox. You might hear that name as a prescription medication, can help speed up that acclimation. But if you walk, hike, climb anything over 10,000 feet, only go up an additional 1,000 feet per day. And for every 3,000 feet that you climb, rest at least a day at that height. So again, climb high, sleep low, drink a lot of water, 3 to 4 quarts of water a day is recommended, and make sure at least about 70% of your calories are coming from carbs. That helps. Don't use tobacco, alcohol, medications, like sleeping pills or anything like that. That all hurts you there. For at least the first 48 hours when you're up there, that can hurt you there. Caffeine is okay if you normally drink it, but excess caffeine can dehydrate you. So that's something obviously you don't want to do.
Well, and you know, that's something that, not to cut you off, but I'm just thinking out loud, you know, a lot of people try to cut weight when it comes to water and food. A quick way to get sick as hell, whether it's altitude sickness or just fatigue, and dehydration, which can equally be as dangerous and bad in the high country, is skimping on water, skimping on food. You know, if you want to prevent altitude sickness, you want to prevent dehydration, you want to, you know, if you want to run your quote-unquote engine, your motor, at a pretty high rate of speed on these hunts, you gotta fucking feed it and you gotta water it. And water and food are definitely, that's not where you want to cut your weight. I hear people talk about, oh, I'm going to live off a granola bar and some gummies and some beef jerky every day, and it's only going to be 4 ounces, and it's okay, I can starve myself, and I don't need that much. Yeah, okay, yeah. Do not do that. Do not go with that philosophy. You are increasing the risk for altitude sickness, dehydration, fatigue. You know, Bo talks about losing all that weight with mono and things going into this hunt. You can go into a hunt tip-top shape and eat like shit and don't drink enough water, and by day 3, your body is wrecked. And then before you know it, you know, you're on day 4 and 5 of a 10-day hunt, and you're done. You're down for the count. And then you can get hit with altitude sickness on top of that, or mono, or, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You can have the, you know, dehydration. Just food for thought, you know, no pun intended. Don't skimp on water and calorie intake up there. That is only increasing your risk for something really bad to take place health-wise. And the high country is not a good place for any of those things to take place. So just a little food for thought there. We haven't really touched on nutrition up there and food and water yet, as far as this, you know, this goes. And I know Bo is very strict on water and calorie intake, and I know the stuff you pack, I know what you bring. I know that wasn't an issue for you, but anybody listening to this, do not, hey, cut your toothbrush in half, cut your freaking laces off your boots. I don't give a shit what you do, but do not skimp on water and do not skimp on calorie intake, because that will bite you in the ass sooner or later. Guaranteed, that will not end well.
No, man, you hit the nail on the head. Not even just with altitude. So one thing that I learned from a previous hunt in Colorado, the first time I went 14 days straight of being out there,
yep,
was I didn't pack enough calories per yep. day. And I go over the top and I count the calories and I try to take you'll never be able to eat enough as you're burning when you're at that point, but yep, you want to take in a lot. And so, like, you can't just have 2,000 calories a day and be okay. Like,
no.
I was doing that, and by day like 12 on that one hunt, that I lost like, I don't know, 15, 16 pounds throughout that period of the hunt. And I ran myself down so sick that I actually got sick while I was, it wasn't altitude on that hunt, but I got sick and I felt like just terrible because it just ran yourself into the ground. So, like, I don't skimp on food. And I think my food weighs about 2.5 pounds per day. I put them in gallon Ziploc bags,
yep,
and I force myself to eat it all. Even when you're not hungry, like, just making sure I eat it all so yep. that you're recovering. It's a super important part. Water, same thing. I always carry a 3-liter bladder and then my Nalgene, which is another liter. So I always have 4 liters of water and then stuff and have plans ahead of time. I do my e-scouting, try to find water ahead of time so that I know where I can go and filter water and have it. Super important part to all of this. And it just, man, I mean, I think that those things alone will just help you out so much. And just, again, just being able to listen to your body, how it's responding. And I think that can help anybody a ton on any of these hunts. And just, again, check your ego at the door and pay attention to that kind of stuff, because it can really help you. And the one thing that I'll say is, like, so, like, I've been a big fan of having this Garmin watch to track my yep. heart rate, my blood oxygen level.
Yep.
But if, say, for example, all right, you're like, hey, I don't want to spend, you know, $300-some on a watch. Like, I get it. There's also things you can do for blood oxygen. Is they have these little clamps that go on your fingers. I think they're like $30. You can get one of those too. Michael carries one of those in addition to his watch. And that will help tell your blood oxygen level. And just, again, this is an awareness thing. Altitude is nothing to be afraid of. It's right. something to be aware of.
Aware.
And,
yep.
and yep. know that, because that's my thought. Like, I'm not afraid to go into the high country again. Like, I'm not anything like that. But I know that, one, I'm going to listen to my body and make sure that I'm good leading up to the hunt, and right. not putting, you know, stressing myself out with, well, now I, you know, I don't have, you know, I have two jobs or whatever, but like still like trying not to have any additional stressors in my life going up into it, trying to make sure I'm healthy, getting enough rest, all those things going up into it will just help you out so much. And that's what I like to leave everybody with on that point, is just like from my story there, is just take care of yourself, listen to your body. And yeah, I think that's it.
Do you think you could have done anything to prevent you getting it, or do you think your body was just so depleted from being sick that realistically it was going to hit you whether you liked it or not? Like what was the doctor's thoughts, or what, I mean, like was there, because me personally, now I'm not a doctor, but I feel like with you having the preconditions, you were almost destined for that disaster and just didn't even know it. But I could be totally wrong. I mean, what did the doctors like?
No, you're totally right. Like the doctor said, like,
that's kind of,
I didn't
was...
know that going into,
right.
Like,
right.
I personally, like, my story isn't like the best learning lesson from that standpoint. Like that had a huge reason to what right. happened to me. But yeah, I was screwed either way. After I learned, I went and got blood work done and all this other stuff afterwards. Well, they tested my heart and everything. Yeah. I was fine. Like, it could make sure I could go back to altitude at some point. And I was fine that way. But I ran myself down so much from stress and not sleeping and all this stuff that just completely, that was the biggest cause for me. And why it happened to me the way that it did. But, I'll recognize that now.
Well, and it's, you know, these like that early season tag in Colorado, that's like a 4 week, it's like a 30-31 day season. If you would have a condition where you are really sick, like what Bo had, it might suck. You might piss work off. You might piss the old lady off. But realistically, you need to move the hunt back, because you're going to end up being in the same position that Bo was in. And that's something to take away from this. Like, if your body is already depleted, and you're at 50-60%, the high country to go chase mule deer or elk is not the place to go on 50-60%. It's tough when you're at 100 walking into it. So for me, that would be the biggest takeaway from Bo's story, is if you're you're recovering from a sinus infection, or whatever it is, some type of sickness, you really, really, really should consider moving that hunt back, because I feel like had you would have done that, now mind you, this is all hindsight's 2020.
Yep.
If you were to have done maybe a week later, you probably would have been okay, because your body would have had time to kind of morph itself back into normality, you know, replenish yourself, you know, kind of get things back in the swing of things instead of shocking your system and then going to the high country, you know. But like I said, now we know that, you know, I mean, it's not like you knew that and then was like, oh, well, fuck it. It is what it is. Like, no, you know, you realistically, like, you didn't even know that, but looking back, that would have probably have, you know, it might've sucked. You might not have been able to go with, you know, with Michael and Mason. I mean, I don't know how it would have panned out, but for you personally, that probably would have saved you from going through all the hardships that you did, but you didn't know that, you know. But food for thought now, I know damn well if you were sick leading up to a hunt, you would push it back because of what you experienced, because you just know it's not going to end well.
Yeah, no, you
and there
you
again, check
on the head, right?
You
there.
Know, that would involve checking the ego. It wouldn't be fun, but it's just what you'd have to do. It's just the smart decision to make.
Yeah, no, you hit the nail on the head right there. And I do want to also say, like, all this stuff that I said here, I'm going to put a disclaimer on it. I'm not a doctor. This is for me doing research and talking to doctors and giving my own explanation on it.
Well, so, same with me. We're just two dudes that are bow hunting in the high country and giving our thoughts on. Yeah, by no means is this God's law that we're speaking, but just what we know and what Bo's experienced. And I have dove into this stuff deeper because of, you know, seeing one of my good buddies go through the, you know, like my biggest concern is always lightning in the high country. I'm not a huge lightning fan up there. I now am a lot more aware of the stresses on my body and altitude sick. Like, you know, I was aware of it, but like, I wasn't super educated on it. And after your experience, what you went through, talking to you daily, you know, knowing how serious it was, it's definitely changed my outlook. And that was the main reason why I wanted to have you on, Bo, was to really bring to light. I think some people kind of laugh at altitude sickness. Oh, you get a headache and you're fine. No. Like, best case scenario, that's all it is. And then you get over it.
Yeah.
But worst
that's the case for people,
yes,
you know?
Yes. But worst case scenario, you're getting life flighted off a mountain in fear of dying. You know, so it's something that, you know, I think more people need to look at and take serious, because it is something that if it hits you and it hits you hard, every second matters and every decision you make matters. This is another reason why Bo and I carry InReaches. You know, shit hits the fan, we can hit the panic button. I mean, you know, he tells a story about not even being able to freaking work his jet boil, and he's worked a jet boil 9 million times in his life. So that just goes to show how out of it, you know, you were. So, you know, a lot to be unpacked there, a lot to be taken away from this, man. I can't thank you enough for having you on. And like I said, you know, super stoked, man. Proud of you for what all you got going on, and for going, making the plunge and going out on your own. And like I said, it's really cool that two of my best buddies both kind of took that plunge, you know, you and Kurt both this year. And it's just, yeah, man, it's awesome that you're doing, chasing the dream, and I've got to be a small part and kind of be along for the ride. So I thank you for that. But hey, where can, give us a quick rundown. Where can everybody find you? Give your YouTube. Bo's got a great YouTube. Give all your handles and stuff on social media. You run great social media pages, your own personal page, the East Meets West page. Where can people find you? You're still doing quite a bit of writing. Just give us a quick breakdown, a quick rundown on where people can find you. You're not that great to look at, but your writing is pretty solid. So, you know, I don't know if anyone wants to look at your pictures, but you're a halfway decent writer and whatnot. So, you know, they might want to read some of your stuff or something. I don't know. Your podcast isn't very good, but there again, maybe someone does want to listen to it. I don't know. You know, it just throw it out there.
You started off strong. You started off strong.
I did.
And then you went down a hole. But, people can find my website, eastmeetswesthunt.com, the podcast, East Meets West Hunt, anywhere you find podcasts. My YouTube channel, just under my personal name, Bo Martonic. I couldn't figure out how to change it to East Meets West, so just look up my name there. Instagram, at bo.martonic, or at East Meets West Hunt. Any of the social media pages, you either type in my name or East Meets West, you'll find all my stuff there. But yeah, I got the film, if you want to check out more of, like,
so
the altitude story, and that film High Altitude is
very,
on
very
my
badass
YouTube channel.
Very badass film. I got to kind of see some clips of that before it came out, and yeah, very, very, very cool. Very, very, very cool film for sure. Which, your YouTube, you've got all your, you have all your films on your YouTube, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah, I get all my films there. All the scouting stuff is on there. That's been something that, we talked all about the Western hunting, but yeah, the Big Woods whitetail thing is kind of my wheelhouse
and what
I do a lot of there.
Go to Bo's,
check that stuff out, and
Bo's YouTube, and you'll there's a plethora of stuff there. You've got a very well-rounded YouTube. I always enjoy going on yours. There's always something on there new, and there's a lot going on your YouTube channel, which is big right now. You definitely got a really, really cool YouTube channel. There's a lot there kind of for anybody, any hunter, gun hunter, bow hunter, whitetail, elk. You do a good job of keeping up with everything you're doing kind of on the YouTube channel. It seems like a lot of people sort of slack off a little bit on the YouTube because it's not as easy as Instagram and Facebook to promote and post. But yeah, you definitely, you bust your ass on your YouTube and it shows. So definitely check Bo out there for sure.
Yeah. And Clint already said that I'm, not really that good to look at, but I did start doing video podcasts that I put up there. So
there you go.
Check them out there if you're more of a visual type of person. But like I said, I won't blame you. You turn it off in the first 5 minutes and listen to the audio. Like, that's fine too. I'm perfectly fine with that.
I mean, he's got a mustache now. Yeah. This is still a fist fight between you and Doug of who's got the better mustache. I try to stay out of that because, I mean, I'm real good buddies with Doug. I'm real good buddies with you. I try to just kind of keep out of that mess.
We've got a good relationship. We just,
you guys do.
We just make out.
Yeah, that's, I was going to say, I mean, I think it's weird that instead of fist fighting, you guys do belly button shots and kiss each other. But hey, whatever works for you guys. I don't have a mustache like that, so I'm not in that club. I don't really know how that all works. That's you guys. But the mustache, the rut stash, you and Doug definitely are the two most famous on that. You guys hold that crowns and titles very well. So that's I'm proud of you both on that.
I haven't told Doug yet, but I had two people send me pictures of Doug at one of the shows you guys were at and be like, "Is this your twin?" And I started laughing. I was like, "Oh, you want to hear that?"
I'll have to make sure if he doesn't listen to this, he at least listens to the ending. He'll be impressed by that. That'll be good.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
No, Clint, I just gotta say thank you so much for having me on, and it's exciting to see you have this show and getting to do it. I mean, it was a long time coming for you to have your own show. And for anyone that didn't know, and you may even forgot about this, but Clint was almost the co-host East Meets West back in the day, but our schedules we knew weren't going to line up when I first started doing this. Do you remember that?
Yeah, no, I do, because I remember we were trying to, trying to figure that all out, and it's tough. It's
I wonder what would have happened then.
What
direction it would have went. Oof. Probably a scandal or two and canceled, and then I'd be living on the street eating garbage. I don't know. I'm not really sure, but
I mean, your mom's is a great woman. I don't think she'd have let you starve. I don't know if your dad would have kept you around as far as like family events, but I do feel like your mom wouldn't have let us starve.
No, I think she would have helped out. My dad might have shot me, but either way.
Well, my man, I can't thank you enough. Like I said, super proud of you. Stoked to see what you've done and where you're going. I know you'll keep climbing till you hit the top. And then once you get to the top, there'll be a new top to go to. So I'm looking forward to seeing it. Everybody go check Bo out. Yeah, man, like I said, can't thank you enough for friendship, most importantly, and for having me on over the years. And it's been a fun ride. Hopefully many more of these episodes down the pipe. I'll have to jump on. It's been a little while since I've been on yours. So we'll have to make that happen here sooner than later. And
About that time, man.
It's about that time.
Yep. People need a pump up episode.
Yeah, I'll have to get a line snorted and jump on and go. I guess I'm kidding. I'm joking. I'm not snorting lines. I'm kidding. It was a joke. Everyone always says it's when I get on Bo's podcast. It's like you got the guy on that's snorts a line before he comes on. I've heard that a time or two before, but just a joke. Not really doing that. Maybe a few Bush Lights, but no cocaine. So anyways, hey, you guys know what to do. Don't be like Bo on the mountain, being a sissy, complaining about altitude sickness, and don't fucking settle. It's just push yourself through it, work through it, All right. We're wrapping it off there. Bo, thanks again, man. Love you, buddy.
Yeah. Thanks. I love you too, bro.
Can you say the letter C? CNC Hunt Files.